Okay, that's that one and that one. All right, good morning all. It's a great pleasure. And amongst you I can recognize some of my geologist friends, some of my oldest members, friends I mean, and so on and so forth. So Tony Martin, who you all know at the back, he spoke to us on Friday, and his timeline was 3.5 billion years. You're only getting 500 from me, so. This is what the Market Square in Kimberley looked like in 1882, and it was a time when both of my great-grandparents were in place, and my grandfather. So it's really in and out of Kimberley, but I'm going to, it's basically two parts. A lot will lead up to this, then you'll get a bit of our own history. Let's go for it. So the county of Cork basically represents a lot of our origin. It's two families. That's my own, Broderick and Mitchell, which was my grandfather's maternal, my father's maternal side. So, as I say, both of them converged on early Kimberley. Apologies for a bit of text, but I tried to illustrate it in between. You don't have to read it, I hope. Anyway, our Broderick lot is reported to have come out of Fermore in County Cork, and you'll find that I've often on a bit more about the Mitchells. And they are said to have had Huguenot origins, but it's very difficult to pin that one down. Effectively, the Edict of Nantes was 1685, and the French stamp there suggests that that was 300 years of, since then, up to 1885, tolerance. But the main evidence points back to the Ulster plantation, which effectively was King James the Sixth of Scotland, later the First of England, sending Scots into Ulster, basically, and Antrim, and our lot, the Mitchells, out of Aberdeen, came into a place called Glen Arm, and there were four brothers. Three of them set off trading into the West Indies, into Philadelphia, into the Carolinas, and there are all sorts of stories which I can't go into. Would be another sort of log. But they did either have their own ship called the Rose, but the fourth brother, Henry Mitchell, ended up in Cork. He got involved, but he died in 1720. And he left all of his tenements to his son, Hugh Henry Mitchell. Just quickly, you'll see we've even got a Mitchell tartan up at the end. So that leads us back to Aberdeen. But this Hugh Mitchell married a Jane Henry, and her brother was Hugh Henry. So what this up for is that we've got to follow the Hughes and the Henrys, because they get very complicated. Anyway, so this Hugh Henry had a son who married Mary Webber out of Cork, and they again well, they came down, and their son was Hugh Henry, who ended up down in Dublin. So just two asides, this Mary Webber, if we go back, her mother was a Rogers, and the Rogers ended up as, they were original Quakers out of Bristol. But if we follow their history back in, through the Irish connection, we come to Rose Blenahan Hassett, who was our first set up by Knight Bruce, Bishop Knight Bruce, came in through Byra and through Matari and set up the first hospital there. And also down in that tree, we end up with Alan Turin, who ended up cracking the enigma. These leads you into all sorts of fascinations, but I mustn't go on these sidetracks. So that's Hugh Henry Mitchell, the one who married Webber. He also was a banker, and he partnered with his uncle, who was Hugh Henry, and eventually he took over the bank as Mitchell and McCarroll in 1738. He was an MP for various constituencies, but he ended up in Glasnevin, which was north of Dublin, and which hosts the famous botanical gardens. And he was responsible for laying much of that out. And he died in 1768, which is the same year as the owner of this house, Mrs. Delaney, died. So it meant that the Mitchells inherited that house, at least Mrs. Mitchell, Whitney Webber, and her son, Hugh Henry. Okay, so, but they put in these amazing Rococo ceilings and things, and that was their situation. So now, here's our friend, Hugh Henry. I won't say how many. But he became Master of Ordnance at Dublin Castle. And that was about 1750 or thereabouts. And he was in charge of maintaining castles and barracks in County Kildare. So during his tenure, the Bedford Tower was established in that Georgian Square at Dublin Castle. He too entered into Irish politics and was MP here and there. But he married an interesting person who was Margaret Gordon. And she was out of Ellen Castle in Aberdeen, north of Aberdeen. And but of some interest to us here, I think, is that she married this guy, Balfour of Balbeny, and his great-grandson was Arthur Balfour. Now, from our point of view, the book that Alice Balfour, 1,200 miles in a wagon, and all those amazing little paintings that are in the archives and on stamps, recorded us. Where is it? It's a funny one. Here we go. Does that help? Anyway, that was just a sideline. Other thing else, Balfour did, Arthur Balfour, was he created the basically the start of the Jewish state, and we know where we are at the moment. Okay, we managed the son of that Hugh Henry, his name was Pierpont, is managed to get the Mitchell Arms and the lozenges and appear on all the various Mitchell things. The important thing is the angel in armor, the spear in the right hand. And this is something it was found in my granddad's bits and bobs. But anyway, that was that. So now that Hugh Mitchell had a son, Hugh Mitchell. Okay. Hugh Henry, I mean. But he was born in 1770 in Glasnevin, where he was christened, and these are three records of the first three siblings. There were six siblings. But his uncle was a person called Andrew Gordon, and he encouraged young Hugh Henry to become an ensign at age 11. And he went shipped off to the Carnatic, or the Anglo-Mysore Wars, in 1782-83. But he was under the command of Sir Aircourt, which is interesting. But his uncle then became a colonel. He took command of the 26th of Foot, which is the Cameronians. And so young Mitchell transferred, and they spent the next, from 1787 right through to 1800, as he slipped again, in Canada. And was involved with all sorts of things on both sides of the border at that stage. But in 1801, which is obviously now stepping into the Napoleonic Wars, he was in Egypt as a captain in the 26th. But at the same time, he was also in the infancy of the concept of light infantry, which introduced the Baker rifle. Hence, 101, whoops, okay. Anyway, that's hence he was first with the 101st of Foot, which is the Bengal Fusiliers. But the Cameroonians, you could see, were entitled to the light infantry elephant and to the Sphinx of Egypt. So he was young Hugh Henry was now promoted lieutenant colonel, and he took command of the 26th in 1805, and later took command of the 51st of Foot, which is the second, the basically today it's known as Quayle, which is the king's own Yorkshire
light infantry. He replaced Lieutenant Colonel John Mainwaring, who had been with the 51st and had been part of that evacuation through Corona, where Sir John Moore was killed. So now they regrouped and they went back into the peninsula. So they went through the battles, all those battles, which is the whole Salamanca, but it was Victoria, all this, right through to Luz again. So that's our young Lieutenant Colonel. That's the gold medal of Salamanca. Now all his medals are in the 51st Museum in Doncaster. But not that one for some reason, I can't tell you why. But anyway, once they had regrouped in the UK, they ended up in Belgium. He was the only colonel in charge of a brigade, which comprised the 1st Battalion of the 23rd, that's the Welsh Lescuers Vierd, the 3rd Battalion of the 14th, that's the Buckinghamshires, and the 51st Foot. And they weren't supposed to be there, but he forced himself onto the right flank, and they were eventually, he was quite involved in the off spin from Hougoumont, which is the great battle. And so he was mentioned in Wellington's dispatches and also made the commander of the Bath. So, a few scenes of that. There's a couple of paintings showing the Curacao's giving themselves up to the 51st and so on. But I found on a long lost cousin who actually lives at a place called O'Hane, which is right next to Waterloo, and that's where he lives. And Lucy's had the privilege of visiting. So in 2015 was the 200th anniversary. And Michael Mitchell, who's became the secretary for the rehabilitation of Hougoumont, the farm, and which was the situation where basically the guards held the doors, and it was a turning point in the battle. And this was the monument that was established in that 200th anniversary. And then Lucy visited, and that is the Nido Road along which the 4th Brigade was based, and they walked the same streets. And then just this year, they had a reenactment, and this is another Mitchell person who lives in Australia, was able to be with Michael, and they were privileged to go through that. So another fascination in my life. So what happened was that Hugh Henry was financed quite heavily by his uncle, probably not by his dad, his bank had sort of collapsed. But he was able to marry He married Harriet Isabella Somerset, who was one of the daughters of the Fifth Duke of Bertha. The only surviving son was a fellow called Hugh Arthur Robert, not Hugh Henry.
We're all overheating a bit, including the projector. Starting up again now.
Anyway, he followed in Stead's footsteps and joined the Grenadier Guards. And he was in Canada in 1837, where he was wounded. Anyway, just to carry on there, he was in Canada, but he came back and ended up in command of the 2nd Battalion of Grenadier Guards. And what is important there is that basically that is the ceremonial battalion, and it's based at the Tower of London. So he married a person called Sarah Lowndes. She is related to the Lowndes of look after your pennies and the pounds, or look after yourself. We should have done the same. They were married at the chapel at the tower, and that's where they lived. And anyway, what now is important is that this comes down to the fact of Okay. So anyway, they were married in King George, and they lived in, this is what it looks like today. 25 Queen Anne Street, which is where this year, Henry died in 1817. Okay, so there, what I was talking about in the Knights World effectively was this was our Evander Robert, the son who became in charge of the 2nd Battalion Grenadier Guards. So what happened that Andrew Gordon died in office as Lieutenant Governor to Jersey in 1806. Harriet's brother happened to be Lord Charles Somerset of the Cape, who was governor from 1814 to 26. Having visited the Somerset West Museum, I don't believe he, they don't believe he was altogether responsible for the Great Cape. But anyway, and also her younger brother was Fitzroy, who had his arm shot off by a cannonball. And was in charge of the army in the Crimea. And then it happened that after the Act of Union, Broderick, who was, would have been William Broderick, he was in charge of, he was a military tailor, and he ended up in the town of Ely in Cambridgeshire, and he married with Susanna Scott. Okay, so that just gives you an idea of what I was talking about. The Tower of London, the Royal Chapel somewhere here, and the Wellington Barracks to be said. So what you're seeing basically this slide is the birth of my two great grandfathers, that's John Maiden Mitchell and George Alexander Broderick, in Wokingham and Ely. So now we're just getting close to what we're interested in. So now we all end up in Kimberley. So diamonds were first discovered in South Africa in 1867, and on Golden's Kop, which was 1871. New Rush changed its name to Kimberley, and George Broderick, and he had a brother called Frederick, made a partnership with Edward Peach, and they set up trading in that market square, and it turned out to be, which was this Edward Peach and Company, which was pretty good. What I found out was he also had a share in the Central Hotel in Kimberley, and it was the first hotel in South Africa to have its electric lighting. Yeah, so something about the Broderick's, my granddad, great grandfather married in Bloemfontein, like how Annie Elizabeth got there, I'm not sure, but that was in the early days of 1879. My granddad, whose name was Edward Peach after the partnership, was born in Kimberley. Two other siblings born there were under oxygen. But his other siblings were born in the UK, which meant that he had returned there, and this was his family in about 92. But what happened with the gold discovery on the Rand in 1886? Peach established in Commissioner Street, and I think John McCrigg was managing the Kimberley Rock. But old Edward Peach went and gambled all the profits away, and eventually went and shot himself. So that meant that great granddad had to come back and as an eight-lander in 1895, he had to try and establish that. Meanwhile, he got involved in the drapery outlet in the Louvre in Birmingham. So, Kimberley and how we get to the Zulu War, that ended in 1879. And now there is another Hugh Henry, that's the son of and he was in the third battalion of the Rifle Brigade based in India. But he was their paymaster, so he was seconded to Sir Osborne in Achawi. And so John Layton Mitchell, who was educated in the UK and in Switzerland, came out to South Africa, but he had a letter to Merriman, and I think he did in his, we had his first meeting with Rhodes, but I don't think he realized it. But what he did was, with that, he joined Sir James Sibright, who was establishing the telegraph line to Kimberley. And so he was involved in that. And eventually, by 1882, he had become the secretary to J.R. Robinson's Standard Diamond Mining Company, which was in stock of plants, yeah. And this is an 1882 situation of the trains in the Kimberley Pit, the Central and the Standard were the ones to hold out against Rhodes and the formation of De Beers. So eventually they got it. And what happened was that Riley was putting up telegraph lines. Mitchell had met with Emily Dumpty in a place called Sterrefontein. It was a little hotel en route from Algoa Bay to Kimberley. They married in Colesburg in 1882. There was a son born, and this indicates he left Standard, he left Robinson, and gone up training up near at Butleros, which is near Kurma. So the young George died in infancy, it was while he was in what they call Moorish country, which was part of then British Petrograd. And in Cervantes, through his book, is a letter of Colonel Mitchell explaining the freebooting which was taking place south of Stellaland, which was headed by Herbert van Niekerk and Kleber. So later on, the republics of Stellaland and Goshen got together and they formed the United States. But their main source of revenue was sale of stamps and then the charging of transit fees when one wishes to go. The crest it's got the rather humanoid face to the line, a bit non-PC perhaps, it's a hand grabbing the lady of the Quran, which what the fish mean and other things, I'm not too sure. Anyway, there's a story that Mitchell was around and about. He came across a bunch of commanders and they said, "What you're up to?" And he says, "We're going to sleep in the house." And he said, "What's for me?" So he said, "Yeah, and we want to see you." And they rode on. So he was one of them, I guess. So Stella then, there are certain parallels with Carruthers, and various things. He was also running back and forth in this period from Stella, Jack Carruthers. But what it was that it was the only real passage up to the north, and obviously roads needed to make some inroads politically and so on. So he did make progress. There was interference from missionary Mackenzie, which I am going to, but what happened basically was that the Warren expedition was set up and headed, and they got as far as the bridgehead, Hornings bridgehead at on the Orange River. And there are indications that Mitchell would have organized these, because he had become secretary, treasurer, and then he organized the Stella Landers to go with their wagon, charge them a price, and bring them up to Stella Land. And of course, there was no shot fired in anger. But anyway, that gives you an idea of the situation of Stella Land on the route up through Mafeking and up north. So there was a lot of business. But anyway, Mitchell was now an outlaw to Warren, but he was an agent to Rhodes. And he skipped across the border to a place called Dr. Swip in the South African Republic. And he settled on what is called the Nalbani Goldfield, which is between Mafeking and Zeerust. He'd also been up to Barberton. So Otto Swoop was basically the key of the coach route up to Pretoria. The Witwatersrand, the gold was discovered in 86, and this represented. So although the Robertson and others had beaten them to the rock, what happened was Mahani became the basis of the origin of the Goldfields Company, which parts of which still exists today. And he was the local agent under Alfred Wright. And he acquired claims on farms at Teotor and Stinkoekwil, and got a whole load of these prospecting licenses. And he was given the power of attorney of Rhodes in that respect. So he basically looked after the Malmani Goldfield up until 1895. So there were a couple of sons born down there, but my grandmother was born at Hottingswood, named near Emily Ellis, who's a bit of humor now, I guess. And that was 1891. There are some minutes which are in the archives, but unfortunately, since 1980, have not been put into acquisition in historical documents and can't be found. But suggesting that Mitchell could try and raise funds for settlement in.
Excuse me, the generator might run out of fuel, so you need to speed it up. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so he was in Makluti, but he didn't get into the pioneer column basically because he was at fever and presumably one of that, of course. But he came up to Buluwayo in 1895, and that was under Vial and Company of networking that you had established in Bulawayo. And he talks about a tall night in the Maximum Hotel. And he describes the whole country road in detail through Fort Zumbu and going there and head to the farm Kachan Road. And he went further west and he picked on Enemy Half on some amazing ancient ruins, the Veracity, which and a number of others in Gondola and elsewhere. He wasn't paid by the Wales, and I found the court case which was in his favour, allowing payment from Samuel and Julius. But anyway, he had great descriptions. So he was in 1896 in the Shirogui area, and he joined the 70 strong evacuation of people to Guelanaga, and became a fellow volunteer under Captain Gibbs, and he was awarded a medal. But he bought a farm called Claremont, which is just on the old Rhondda River.
Here we go. Yeah. Sorry, guys, we're going
to have to get sort of a generator. Yeah. I said, well, he's got 5 meters. We have to carry on just sort through. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyway, there are all sorts of interesting. So that's stopped on. Claremont Farm. Yeah. So. Anyway, he was involved in all sorts of things, and basically trapped in there. And he was head of the.
Can use this as a guide.
Okay.
You can maybe put it there. Mm.
So okay. Anyway, so I brought up another bit of family tree, which basically brought the two families together in Kimberley, their great grandparents, my grandparents, and then their three siblings. So, all three. My dad was the last born. What have you seen of this? Okay. So so just going back to the projects, they were in the UK, and my granddad, his brother Frederick, they had the privilege of an education at Berkhamsted. And anyway, what happened was that the old man there that died in 1899. So my granddad, being the oldest, wanted to do medicine, but he ended up doing part-time BSc to the University of London in Birmingham. And in the meantime, he was working for a company called Spilsbury's. And Spilsbury is regarded as the pioneer of forensic science. So it was interesting. But he graduated in 1902, and he ended up teaching chemistry at St. David's in Langbeta in Wales. But that was attached to St. David's at Aberystwyth. And he then started reading for holy orders, and he was ordained priest in 1906. So what he did was he volunteered for the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel and he volunteered to come out to back to his roots here, and he ended up in Bulawayo teaching at St. John's. At St. John's now is the cathedral and all that in Bulawayo, Anglican. He then became not priest in charge, but he was attached to St. Columbus, which is just on the west, just into the western suburbs of Bulawayo. And he went out to, he outreached to places like St. Aidan's and St. Matthias. Now, St. Aidan's mission is in Thomas and Luna. And Thomas and Luna is 10 kilometers south of a mine called Morven. Now, Morven mine happened to be where great-grandfather Mitchell was secretary, and his daughter, Emily Alice, was there, and he had met her through St. John's. So, obviously, and I've got a picture here of his bicycle when he used to do patrols into Guapa and Changwangi, in those days called nature reserves. And anyway, obviously there was a spark there, and that was that. But in 1908 he was transferred to St. Augustine's in Penalonga, and what he did was from there he reconnoitred through Tsonzo, another St. Matthias, to Wonder Mission at Sanyatri or Juliusel, and he then went back in, and in 1910 he became the first priest in charge of Wonder Mission. So he set that up. But he escaped to England because old Mitchell had sent his daughter to the UK, where his sister, who was of the Society of St. John the Baptist, as a good nun, and at that moment in time was in charge of what they called the House of Mercy in Gloucester. Anyway, she became a pediatric nurse, and in 1911, Roderick was there, and through the connivance of Honourable Sister, they were married in Trigworth Church, which is just near Gloucester, and came back and they established together on the mission. So this slide is one that I compiled through Rob's library. He's got all the Mashonaland Quarterly papers from the diocese, and all the Bonda stuff, and all his outreaches, and it makes all over the Nyanga district are quite incredible. So it wasn't just he could horse ride to St. Clyde's Hill. He could. He went all the way up through the Dutch settlement, right up the north, crossed over the mountains, and his descriptions are pretty exhausting. Went all the way down to Katerere, which is way up in the Nyanga north. He used to go through. Where's this? Just right. Through. Roads Estate, and double back into Tangwena country, and then double back into the Hondi Valley. And so it's quite a fascinating map I managed to compile. Anyway, there were two children, that's my aunt and uncle. They were born in 1912, 1914 in Bonda. Anyway, they became linguists and got pretty I'd say with the Manik people, especially the women. And so it was what they called a migrant record that on the hospital was named for my grandmother in 1950. And not that he established the school, but the St. David's, and that's named after Aberystwyth, is now quite a renowned secondary school for girls, say. Anyway, ill health and so on, they returned to Bulawayo, and he was priest in charge at St. Columbus. And he also took in some maidens again, but things had passed on. They had typhoid, and what happened was that he then became the chaplain in charge at what was called Cedric College in Bulawayo. Now, Cedric College is the forerunner to Zawi, and in the late 20s, it had transferred up to Salisbury and was established at what is now Bishop's Mount, up near in Msasa. It was basically that which the concept of Carver and Grinham and Razawi, it took over from that. All the school desks went to Razawi, and Razawi's the rest of the story. My dad was pupil number 29. But after the First World War, there was Herbert Stanley Kegwin, who was a matter commissioner, and in the Shanoi, and he developed what he called the Kegwin Plan, and that resulted in the establishment of the Department of Native Development and the building of Dombushawa and Chorocho trade schools, one in Madeline, one in Shonaland. And what he did was he invited my granddad to become the inaugural priest of Dombushawa, not the priest. He had to be a principal, and he had to become a civil servant. Anyway, they moved to Tinamora in 1922, and that was the... So there were three hours of the talk, and then various trades. So Dobbershaw actually rapidly developed as the pride of and the nucleus of Native education. And we can carry on the whole story through Blood Africa, which is through the Hammonds. Chorocho suffered because of the annual floods of the Guaya, basically. And my granddad, who had to stand in there for a few months, described an amazing wagon trip from Yaman Chobo Station to Chorocho across the flooded Guaya River. The wagon from Dombushawa during the rains would take 2 days, and the outspan was on Bucket Hill. So that basically meant that the wagon eventually changed to a three-gear Trojan and so on and so forth. I've got various pictures here, which unfortunately you can't see, but Emery Ellsworth, who was an agricultural missionary, he became a great ally in upgrading the trades at Dombushawa. He was there. Anyway, there's various photographs I've got of the house that's built, and it's still there. The little chapel that you can get some visit at Dombushawa, and the White Hall was built in 1935, which is the year after he left. But one of the best reliefs, which was set up by Marco that's out in Michaelis, was the artist. And so it's quite well worth a little trip around Dambuchar just to get an idea. My dad was born, brought up there basically, and I've got pictures of him. My grandfather lived there with him. My great-grandfather, that's Leighton Mitchell, and he died there in 1933, but he had been dreaming of platinum because in 1924, Sachet discovered platinum near Maquiro. I've actually been down his adder, and the Granger brothers discovered platinum down in what is now Mesa Mine, the Wetzel Mine. So it is the fact that we are dealing with the centenary for the first production of platinum coming up. So what's the space? It was John O'Borchers is writing a book. And anyway, it's 100 years since they didn't get much platinum out of it. And obviously it didn't happen until the 80s. But anyway, it's another story. So what also happened, Dambuchar Cave was discovered. And we obviously know it was a tourist venture, but it was a rain-making secret. And they had, the folks had the business of Rubinius and Elizabeth Goodall to come and record. Her name was Mannerheim, and she married the SAP escort, who was a sort of a Da Vinci German. So it was in 1934. There was disagreement with the director of Native Education. His name was Mr. George. But King Sabuza had invited my grandfather to become the first principal of the National School of Swaziland. He said, but he had to follow not missionary principles, but Swazi principles, which he did. So in 1934, there was the first revival of the annual Regions, which is the inauguration of maidens and so on. And all of those original photographs, including the Queen Mother, are in the archives, which can't be found. So they did receive on their departure in 1935 the royal feather of King Sabuza, which I still have in my thinking, but it was a... And then we visited the school back in 2009, I think it was. He came back and then rejoined the fold. He was he became priest in charge of St. Mary's Anyani, which is now Chitambeza, and was there until 1940. Got to grips with, he got to know the Seti people very well, and then became secretary treasurer to the Salisbury Cathedral, and eventually retired to his home just in Colne Valley called Lisbon, which is another family story. My mother died in, my grandmother died in 1946, but what had happened was that my dad volunteered for the Long Range Desert Group and ended up on the island of Leros in Aegea when he was captured in November. And so anyway, his release from POW just 3 days of the passing of his mother. So in 1950, he remarried, and it was to Hilary Gray, who was the secretary to Richard Pratchett at the cathedral. And so they married in 1950. She carried on. My granddad wrote the history of this diocese of Southern Rhodesia up to 1952, which in the church had been cyclicized, but there is no copies in the archives, which can't be found. She was eventually ordered the Order of Epiphany, and she died at Borodil Trust in 1985. She is remembered as, just one more slide. My dad joined the Native Department in 39, but his service was carried through, and he rejoined in 46. And he married my mother, whose name was Marjorie Munton, who had come out on the staff of Cynthia Tate. Cynthia Tate was the wife of Admiral Sir Campbell Tate, who was governor of Southern Rhodesia, and who had died here in office in 1946. I was born in Trebani Mine, Balingwe district, in 1949. And basically my friends were all messengers and the bandits. And that's basically how I grew up, moving around this country, my passion for geology. And that was it. I had a privileged upbringing. And so as a geologist, basically, I was sitting on the red lichen of Dombashan, which makes me very happy. Thank you, Hamilton.
You've done so much work in going right back into Ireland, Scotland, over many, many years. So it really is amazing. Also, something that struck me was how many people in this country, if they're really digging to their family's past, have Irish connections. Cork seems to come up in it all the time. I think Cork was a seaport, and people left from there to go to Africa or South Africa. So it was fascinating. So thank you very much, Tim. Any questions, please?
Can I just ask, you said that there's a bite hall at Dombashan?
Yep.
Called a bite hall?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it doesn't have Alfred White's painting in the foyer.
No, it used to have all the photographs and things which now disappear.
Because that was one of the
stipulations
of the
light,
I wonder whether
that's
been
one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any more questions, folks?
I wonder if the families still have all those old stamps and documents from Stellenant and the date, then it's worth a while.
I've got my grandfather's, part of my grandfather's collection, but unfortunately it was split 3 ways. So the older stamps are elsewhere.
I think coming out of that talk are two subjects that maybe we should follow up. First of all, the work that he's done to establish Dr. Sharma and Toronto. I think an awful lot of work was done in the 20s and 30s towards developing African agriculture. And it's something that we as a history society haven't focused on to my knowledge. That could be a subject of a talk in some stage that would work with our board and do
try. If you follow that from our board, you would have some interest.
They did an amazing amount of work, yeah.
Good. Thank you all very much. If there's any more questions, thank you very much. Good to see you.
Thank you very much.